You know, when I was in high school, I captured a pigeon.
Did you really?
Yeah. A pigeon just walked up to me and I was like, all right. And I was with my high school friends and I put the pigeon in a big box and I named him Poor Olympio.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Happy birthday, Teddy.
Hey, happy birthday, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I figured, you know, we're recording at 6 in the morning for our listeners because it was Ted's birthday last night, but I was worried I was going to miss wishing him a happy birthday, but then I remembered they celebrate birthdays all week in the Willett House, so I'm not late.
That's the way we do it.
I'm not late.
No.
Yeah, so what'd you do for your birthday?
I had a great birthday yesterday, Friday. Work threw me a little breakfast.
Oh, nice.
That was nice, hanging out with some co-workers. And then after work, well, I left work early to go to Audrey's final JV basketball game of the season. They only play 8 games in 6 weeks.
And what was their final record?
Their final record.
Undefeated for a while.
They're undefeated. And then I was like, oh, you guys lost one. She goes, don't mention it on the podcast. So I took a break from talking about it for a couple of weeks. And then, but yesterday they went up against their rival middle school, Jordan, and they beat them. So they won the last game and they secured the title. So congratulations to Luther Burbank Middle School girls JV basketball team.
Cool. Congratulations. So there's no playoffs or anything. It's just like the two best teams play or something?
No, it wasn't even like the two best teams. It just...
Oh, the best record wins and that's it.
The best record wins and gotcha. They had the best record.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then we went with my church to a synagogue. So we had Shabbat services last night in solidarity for the Pittsburgh shooting. So my Catholic church and two other synagogues went to the one Temple Judea.
Yeah.
Synagogue right here on Lindley. And we had a nice service with 4 congregations all together. It was very nice.
Cool.
And then Ann took us out to dinner. Thanks to my mother-in-law, Rosie Reese. Went to Maggiano's. Because I'm out of the 6-week program, I just had a crazy pasta dinner. So it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. And yeah, I saw you in a nice blue suit.
Yeah.
Okay, so you brought it up and I know everyone's been waiting and I haven't probed all week because I want it to be fresh. So where did you land on the 6-week program?
On the 6-week program, I hit my goal. I hit 22 pounds down.
I'm a lean, mean fighting machine. I'm a lean, mean fighting machine. I'm a robot.
Whoa, well done, my man.
I don't know about Maggiano's last night with the pasta dinner.
Don't matter. The 6-week program's over.
But yeah, thanks to Ryan and all the people over at Rise. They were great and it was a lot of fun. So it was a lot of fun, good workouts, amazing training staff over there. Yeah.
One of the things I was thinking while you were going through that, and I don't know why I didn't bring it up sooner, was like, okay, you're doing these workouts and things. And one thing, like you're putting on muscle, you're losing fat, but you have to like lose more fat than the muscle you're gaining because, you know, muscle weighs.
Yeah.
So that's really a tough thing to accomplish, you know?
Well, it's a tough needle to thread. And they, you know, I think there are times when I was putting on, you know, because of the way that I was weighing with this cool scale that's more than a scale and it has like the probes on it. So when you have your thumbs on the sensor, it's taking your body mass more than your body mass index. It's going through and
fat percentage and stuff
and doing fat percentages.
We have a Fitbit one that does that.
Yeah. So if it does, if you do go up in weight and up in muscle mass, he'll adjust for it.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
So like if your percentage of body fat goes down, but your weight kind of holds flat, he goes, there's a way we can, if you lose percentage of body fat, then we'll do it. But I was trending in a way where he only told me that 1 week. But he goes, I think you're going to lose, you know, you'll hold or go down in body fat and you'll lose the 20 pounds regardless. But he did caveat that. Oh, and Ann wants to make sure that I say, we try to go to Gladstone's, but I don't know if you know, the Gladstone's down here is over in Malibu, but so because of the fires, Ann's reservations for seafood, which would have been a lighter meal. Yes, she's definitely right on that.
But you don't need a light meal. It's over.
It's over, but I don't want to gate it back.
No, I know. I know. Are you going to stick with the gym or anything, or what's the plan now?
I'm definitely still running. I ran every day this week except for Friday. So I've stepped up the running, and I do some of the circuit stuff that I did during the 6-week program. So it's good.
And what kind of distances are you running?
It's more about the speed.
Like intervals?
Intervals for sure.
Like HIIT, high intensity interval training?
High intensity interval training, yes. So I've definitely stepped it up. I used to go 3 miles an hour, 6 miles an hour for 30 minutes, for half an hour. But now I'm doing like 9 miles an hour. So I'm running a lot faster for a minute.
Oh, that's a good pace. Yeah.
You know, and then a minute on and then 2 minutes off, but for like 20, 25 minutes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Where's that, like around the neighborhood?
Oh, no, that's just on a treadmill.
Oh, okay. So it's more controlled.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're like a gerbil. Nice. Cool, man. Well, congratulations. Well done.
How about you? Thank you. How about you? How was your week?
Yeah, week was good. My mom's in town for Mikey's birthday. His birthday is coming up next week, so she wanted to be here for that. He's turning four.
Cool.
And I don't know if you can hear him in the morning, so of course the house is like rocking and rolling at 6 a.m., so getting up to do this podcast is too difficult. And then speaking of fitness, I had a Fitbit surge, and it died on me, so the touchscreen stopped working. The battery lasts like a day, you know. It was probably, I got it like shortly after they released that one, like, I don't know, 4 years ago or something. And yeah, whatever. So I got a new one, the Fitbit Ionic.
Oh, yeah?
And
how's that?
It's cool. I got it refurbished. You know, I don't like paying full retail for stuff. So I got it refurbished. It was about $50 cheaper. And I've bought so many refurbished items in time. And it seems like the stuff I buy new always goes bad before the stuff that's refurbished, you know? So maybe it's like they fixed whatever and then it just keeps rocking and rolling. So I always have good experience with refurbished and it saves a little bit of money. Why not?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I got that thing and we'll see. I'll have to let you know. And, you know, with, you know, bikes and or my biking and working out and stuff also.
Awesome.
But yeah, cool. Cool. So, well, again, happy birthday. Let's rock and roll.
Awesome.
How about we do Gary Winogrand, All Things Are Photographable.
Yeah. So I love it. This is the first Jimmy selection for a trailer we cover, right?
No, I might have done one more in the past.
Oh, one other?
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Come on, give me some credit here. This is episode 47, after all. Oh, hey, before we do that, let's read a review.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I like to do that because it lets people know that we actually care. So...
We care that they care.
Okay, let's see. We have, 36 ratings, and I don't know how many reviews that is. Let's see. Let's go to, I don't know. Should I just, like, throw a dart at the board?
Just pick one. Totally.
All right. Well, I'll go, I think we did, yeah, whatever. Most recent. We'll go there. By Lug Nug. Great host. 5 stars. November 9th. So this is a very recent one. Interested by the concept of reviewing trailers, but I was hooked by the banter and chemistry of the hosts. Very well edited and full of laughs throughout.
So cool.
There you go. A nice quick one for us. Yeah, we appreciate it there, Lug Nug. All right.
Oh, and have you seen anything this week? I know you guys have been prepping and have family out of town, but did you watch anything?
We did a couple episodes of Designated Survivor. It was quick.
Oh, okay. Still on that?
Yeah, it was quick. My mom's here, you know, and when she got in, we wound up, because she was the one that turned us on to the show, so she wanted to watch an episode with us and stuff. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So we got to watch that, and you know, it's one of those things where she knows the whole thing. We don't know anything. Oh, this guy. Oh, I can't tell you.
You should watch this part.
Yeah. You know, and I'm like, come on.
Did you see that? And you're like, no, I didn't see it. Just leave us alone.
And I said, and so, let me guess, this guy's gonna be, you know, this character, and he's gonna do that. And my mom's like, oh, you're good. I'm like, they lay it out pretty easy, you know, like it's not too highbrow of a show, you know.
Oh yeah. And then so we saw, I took the family to The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, so we saw that in the theaters last weekend, and it was amazing. I was really taken by it. It was
like movie theater, not stage theater.
Movie theater, exactly. So Disney did their take on this ballet classic, but they included a huge ballet section, which they didn't skimp on, which I thought was was great. They got Misty Copeland, prima ballerina, to perform the actual Nutcracker within the movie, The Nutcracker in the Four Realms.
Yeah.
And then the story that they added to it was amazing. I won't give any spoilers because there's definitely some good stuff in there. But the worlds that they build and the way that they lay it out is new and fresh. And I think last week we talked about, do these stories need to be retold? And this definitely falls in a very sophisticated space of, yes, this is a retelling that is worth giving a look.
Yeah, very cool. And kind of on that, I agree. And I think that's where this Gary Winogrand documentary comes in, that all things are photographable. I think all stories are tellable and retellable.
Yeah. Give an interesting angle, give a twist, give a special eye, a special perspective. And that's a reason enough to do it.
Exactly. I mean, if you're just hashing out you're rubber stamping a remake, then it doesn't need to be told. But if you're
right,
creative, why not, you know?
Yeah.
I agree. Cool. Okay, well, now let's get to it.
Yeah. So how did you find this trailer?
I listened to, as you know, being into photography and stuff, I listened to photography podcasts, and Iberian X Perello, he does the Candid Frame, and I probably just destroyed his name, I'm sure. But he does the Candid Frame, and the Candid Frame is this highbrow, sophisticated podcast where he interviews like the greatest photographers, you know, that are still living. And he interviewed this woman who is doing the documentary on Gary Winogrand, All Things Photographable, Sasha Waters Fryer, and she's the producer and director and writer, I think, of this documentary that I listened to on the podcast. And so it was just an interview I heard with her. So I looked it up, and I thought it was a really cool way to do a movie trailer, because it's a photographer and you hear a lot of the voiceover in the background while they're flipping through almost like a slideshow of his pictures as they're kind of describing what's going on. And then every once in a while they interject with like one of the people who are reviewing it, you know, and it just, yeah, it caught me, and I enjoyed how he looks a lot like Al Franken.
Yeah, no, it was a great trailer, a great subject matter, and it eases you into the space. There's, you know, even the trailer's kind of this beautiful meditative space. I think that might be our theme for this week. I don't know yet.
I can see that.
You know, it is a cool retelling, and I think the power of his photography.
Oh, it's amazing.
Lends itself to that, you know? And they really picked like a beautiful, the trailer tells enough of the story that it encapsulates its own trailer story. You know, you talk about the legs, you talk about the man, you build up who he was, and you show a good chunk of his work. And then there's that mystery. And I don't know, I'm concerned either film cinematically, whether they didn't go the mystery route because the film doesn't go the mystery route, or did they just undersell it in the trailer? Because to me, that dying with you know,
thousands of rolls of undeveloped film.
Thousands of rolls of undeveloped film. To me, that's such a mystery that, like, do they dive into that in the movie? We don't know. You know, like, I think it feels like they do, but do you feel like they didn't sell that as a real cliffhanger?
Well, in the photography world, it's well known that he had thousands of rolls of undeveloped film. So maybe if they're not really selling it, maybe they feel that, speaking to their audience, they don't really need to sell that.
Ah, okay.
However, I think that the mystery might be they develop the film and then put up some of those shots and talk about what they found.
Right.
If the family allows it, I guess. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the family who's holding on to the film or something.
Yeah, that's dangerous, you know? You can't be holding on to film, like undeveloped film, right?
And it might be some of the greatest. It's kind of like the library at Alexandria, you know? I mean, you don't want to lose it.
Yeah.
You know? And we got to wait before Caesar marches in and burns the whole thing down. You know? But
yeah.
Anyway, no, I thought it was really cool. And I like how, like, even though the guy took so many amazing pictures and did all this stuff, they showed show him in the picture just baffled and confused while trying to figure out his camera.
Yeah, and I think I
love that.
And also the VO in that section is great because it talks about...
It's very human.
Yeah, it talks about... And I think you had mentioned this a couple weeks ago about being a photographer at a wedding and things like that, where you're kind of, you know, the gent... We talked about being a female photographer versus a male photographer and the way... The different ways that in a wedding you want to break down the people's, you know, stiffness in front of the camera. And to me, that whole idea of him being baffled with the camera, you know, he would leave, what did she say? He would leave you with the idea of not even knowing whether he had taken your photograph or not because he was so odd in his mannerisms around taking pictures. And I think that's disarming in a way that is, that allows you to get these shots that he ended up getting. And to the whole idea of thousands of rolls of undeveloped film, like how does he know when he's gone through it? Like, does he just know, like I took those 36 or whatever the exposures are and they're trash. So I'm not going to waste my time developing them, you know? Or like, oh, I remember this one shot. Like, what kind of... I want to see his notes. I want to see like his
right,
his film, his roll notes, or I don't know what you guys call it.
Yeah, I mean, more or less. Because it's like you take a shot, you write down, you know, like what your shutter speed and your aperture was, and you already know the speed of the film unless you pushed it. But yeah, and the funny thing is, I mean, how many times are you there? And maybe because digital cameras are different, you know, there's like so many damn buttons, but you're sitting there and you're like, oh man, where's that button again? You know, like all you want to do is make one little change and you're just baffled by your camera, no matter how often you use it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just wanted to throw this one out there because, you know, we don't often do documentaries. And the last one that I suggested was Why We Cycle. That was the Dutch bicycle one, if you recall.
Yes. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, overall though, I thought it was just a fun way to talk about an old photographer who's passed and his images, who he was. I mean, the guy's like a world-renowned street photographer, you know, that was kind of like in the last throes of street photography before it fell away for a long time. And in this kind of resurgence of urbanism and street photography and just all the stuff going on, I think it's like timely to tell. So, and even the shots that what I would consider a miss, like when you see the boxing arm and half of the guy's body like swinging and it's like kind of blurry.
Yeah.
I mean, today I'd take that shot and I'd be like, well, that was a complete miss. But because it was like done on film by this iconic dude so many years ago, like it's a cool capture, you know?
Yeah. And it caught so much more of like the visceral timeliness of like missing it. And I definitely like, for me, his compositions are crazy because I always try to include legs and things like that and get the completeness.
Yeah. You don't want to cut off fingertips, you know? But
I usually end up adding things that I don't want to. And yet the stuff that he has on the edges of his frame are amazing.
Right. And that's why I've always said like photography is like an art of exclusion, or like painting would be like an art of inclusion.
Right.
You know, because really what you're trying to do in photography is you don't want like the stop sign coming out of the back of the person's head, you know? So you just shift your body and composition to like eliminate the stop sign from the frame.
Right.
Whereas if you're painting, you just don't put it in.
Right.
And you paint other stuff in there. You know, you paint in like rose bushes or something, right?
Let's paint several little happy trees.
Happy little trees. Yeah, so this is playing at the Lamley Playhouse over in Glendale. So, I mean, it's out now. So I'm sure it'll be streaming soon. And this is one of those films that it's like, it sucks that you guys don't have a Lamley up there, right? You don't have any, do you have art house theaters?
No, the best we do is like an AMC, and then that's in Santa Maria north of us. And then we have like a little old school one in town, you know, but that just plays like second runs or whatever.
Right. So I think this speaks again to, we talked a little bit about it a couple weeks ago, the Filmstruck closing its doors, closing its stream. And now there's a change.org petition to hashtag save Filmstruck. So I think it might be closed by the time this releases, but it's definitely something worth looking into. I've definitely signed the petition.
We'll put it on the website.
Cool.
Because I want to sign it. I didn't know it existed, and we'll get other people to sign it. So, and this is one of those kind of art house films that would come out that, no pun intended, talks about film.
Yeah.
So... and all the undeveloped film. All right. So would you watch something like this?
I would totally watch this. This looks great. I mean, the guy looks super interesting. And there's a mystery, and I want to see whether the documentary dives in the mystery or has to downplay it.
Yeah. All right. All right. Let's move on to Arctic. So
Arctic.
It's a teaser trailer.
So to me, it's a teaser trailer. I watched.
But more to you, it's your love affair with Mads.
It has Mads in it. That's what made me. That was the clickbait that got me there. Arctic is the name of the movie. Kind of a nondescript movie title. So it leads you a little bit down a path there to wanting to figure out what it was. But definitely Mads is the reason that I clicked on it. And then again, another meditative teaser. I mean, all teasers try to do this, but this is like a short film to me. It's more of a short film than a teaser trailer to something else. It says so much with no dialogue, very little action. And then you almost have to, I had to watch it twice. You know, I actually watched it twice because the way we drop the kids off, Audrey's school is 20 minutes before Bryce gets to go into his school. So we have like 15 minutes between where I sit with Bryce and we normally talk about stuff or finish up some homework or something. But we had some time and I was watching these trailers in the car and I was like, I don't know if you can watch this because Mads is Hannibal. Who knows what he's doing in this teaser? So I watched it first by myself. And then he's like, can I watch it? And I'm like, sure, you can watch it. And I watched it again with him and I picked up new things and I picked up new little nuances. So I was really taken by this very, very simple concept that was executed in such a beautiful way that I feel like it's a piece unto itself.
Yeah, I think you just read my movie notes. No, I couldn't agree more. I felt the same where it was just like a short film. I think if you could do like a 1.5 minute short film to send to like, you know, a South by Southwest or, you know, a whatever Sundance kind of a festival or something.
Right.
This would be something I'd love to see, you know, like, or sometimes like I know there's different companies like camera companies, microphone companies.
Oh, yeah.
What they do is they have like short film contests.
Uh-huh.
Like send in your short film for like 1-2 minutes to see about who wins like, you know, the new camera or something, right?
And exactly.
And something like this could certainly win. And what I love about it is a few things. One, there's no dialogue at all.
Right.
Two, they don't even sell you on the character because his face is covered.
Right.
So if you didn't know who it was, like if you did no looking at or reading of anything about it, you wouldn't know who the actor was because you just see eyes.
Right.
And you see him digging. And at first you're thinking, well, how does he know where to dig? And then like, why is he doing this weird digging? Who cares about these rocks or whatever? But then when you see the end, okay, he's walking back to a plane. So he did some digging. He moved a few rocks. He's going to fly out. And then you see SOS and you're like,
and then you pull out. Yeah.
Whoa, he's stuck there. Like they do, they throw that twist at you, you know? And I thought the whole thing was, you know, and then you're thinking like, well, what's with the watch?
Right.
Safety maybe from weather because he knows like it's like Han Solo, you know, he can't go out after, you know, because it gets too cold and his Tauntaun won't survive the night.
Your Tauntaun will freeze before you reach the first marker.
Then I'll see you in hell.
That's awesome. Yep.
So he goes to hunker down in the airplane and it's like, okay, he's going to get back at it again in the morning, you know?
Yeah. So to me, it's, and it's all so economical. So the lack of dialogue is an economy. So you can hit an international audience. You don't need language to sell it. The economy of the rocks, like if you didn't get the fact that it's a white rock in a black path that he's removing, they show it to you again. So there's a second rock.
Right.
But the watch to me, it definitely showcases what you're saying, like he's got to get back to the plane in time before dark falls. But to me, it also shows like status, like it's a really expensive watch. He's a rich man, you know what I mean? And he's determined. So we see so little about the character. And yet I feel like we know a lot of important facets about who he is. You know, he's a rich man. He's stranded. He's determined. He's so much, and it leaves so much to the imagination, and yet it's so encapsulated.
Yeah, and what do you think it is with the spelling of Arctic? Is like maybe that's his name?
Oh, I don't even check that.
Because I did no research on any of these.
Well, I hit you so late with that. So.
Just a little pulling back the onion. Ted doesn't get me these until like late last night, and I was like already had all the electronics off and was getting ready for bed.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it foreign? Is it a...
I thought that too, but...
I don't know about the spelling.
No, I mean, overall, though, I think it's you know, it looks amazing. I don't know where the rest of the story is going to go. If it's going to be kind of like his Castaway, where he's just, instead of being on the island, he's in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just kind of, pardon the pun, he goes mad. And trying to get out and wait for someone to fly over, I suppose, to see his SOS.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it.
I want to see more. I want to see more. I'm very intrigued.
I definitely want to see more. I want to see the movie, and we shall see. I'll continue my Mads obsession.
Awesome. From Mads to Mowgli.
Yes, from a solo person to a group, to a pack.
Still solo, but solo man, pack wolf. And so Mowgli, this is like what, the Jungle Book?
So, yeah, like we've said in the past, a lot of times when films happen, they happen in pairs.
Yeah.
Dante's Peak and Earthquake, I think, or Volcano. But it hasn't happened in a long time. And I think Jungle Book was being produced by Disney, and this was being produced by, I think it was Warner Brothers.
And it's on Netflix, right?
Netflix bought it. It feels like Netflix bought it from Andy Serkis. So Andy Serkis is a director, and he also owns the mocap production company who did all the visual effects, the graphics for this. So I think they bought it outright to kind of further the division of the streaming space. Did you hear Disney came out with a name for their streamer this week?
No, I didn't.
So Disney Plus is the name of Disney's direct-to-consumer streaming service.
So is that replacing like Disney Now?
So Disney Now is actually a different type of service. So Disney Now is for the kids' networks.
Okay.
And it is attached to your cable subscription.
Yeah.
So if you have a cable subscription, you can verify that or validate through that, and then you get a different kind of streaming service with Disney Now. So Disney Plus is a standalone direct-to-consumer with a whole bunch of separate content. And I think, you know, they have a bunch of Star Wars shows that are going to be live-action Star Wars limited series or full, you know, series, and then Loki.
That are not theatrical releases. Okay.
Loki, you know, Loki's dead. I don't want to be a spoiler, but Loki's dead in the theatrical world. But Tom Hiddleston is going to play Loki in a series that's going to be live action on...
Kind of a parallel universe to what was going on in the movie space.
Yeah, or like a prequel, you know, something before the timeline where we sit in the cinematic space. But it's going to be within this Disney Plus housing.
And yet still canon.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of content that's going to be strictly for Disney Plus. And I think some people are saying that that's why Netflix seems to be canceling a lot of their Marvel shows.
Right.
So this buying Mowgli outright from whoever produced it is another sign that they're, you know, we're going to lose Jungle Book at the end of 2019, but we're going to have Mowgli as our own, you know, Kipling property within Netflix forever.
Because end of 2019, Disney's pulling back the reins on what they're streaming on Netflix.
Yeah, that's when all of the licensing agreements are ending.
Yeah,
for Netflix to air Disney stuff.
Got it.
But what? So this take on you? Did you see the Jungle Book?
I mean, a long time ago, I did.
Oh, you didn't see?
You know, the cartoon version. I haven't seen I didn't see the new one. No.
Okay. So the live action Jungle Book, the one that just came out, was a great retelling. It kind of straddled the line between a new feature action movie and the old classic animated Jungle Book.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of people associate Jungle Book with Disney. So this is interesting.
Exactly.
Because it's called Mowgli. And of course, we all know, well, it's like they're Kipling stories. So it's their fables told by Rudyard Kipling. And it was actually one of Bryce's big comments about the movie was like, why they call it Mowgli? Isn't this called the Jungle Book? It should be called the Jungle Book. So
yeah,
he was taken aback by that. It definitely has a more grown up feel to it, and it and the animation is very, you know, the anthropomorphization of animals has been done in movies forever.
Sure.
But the way that they move the face, the facial features, it's definitely leveraging Andy Serkis's mocap, facial mocap visual effects company. So I love the idea of having more than just the eyes moving. You know, it looks like the whole face of all these animals has been captured and is showing more and more human than any other animals that I've seen.
Yeah, and I like how, like we said earlier in the episode, in our episode, that it's just, does this story need to be told again? And if you tell the story in a unique way that's different, maybe has some subtleties, some things like outright different, that, yeah, the story can be told. And it's one of those things where, like, it's an interesting play on deforestation and kind of where we are in our modern time that they probably didn't touch on in the older movies, the animated movies and things, and why this kid is so tied to the forest and the jungle, and how, like, modern humans are going in, whether it's deforestation or taking animals and, you know, maybe poaching,
right,
and all that kind of stuff. And maybe it's addressing more of the geopolitical things, climate change and whatever else is going on, and maybe it's doing some addressing there too, to say, like, look, here's the same story that we're rehashing, but maybe we're bringing in some important message that wasn't told the first go around.
My only concern for this was,
it's too preachy?
Totally too preachy, don't you think?
Oh, okay. I got that a little bit, yeah.
For a trailer, I was thinking it probably, it sets up your main antagonist a little bit differently, and I guess it had to set that up differently. So I think Shere Khan is an interesting thing at the end there. I don't know how it, once you've set up the humans encroaching on the habitat of these jungle animals, I don't understand how Shere Khan plays into it at the end. You know, it's kind of like a little bit of a button where we bring back, we still have to be scared of the tiger. And I don't know. It felt strange because Mowgli is so central and he's already drawn the line where he's neither animal nor human. And he's in this peril from that stance, you know, in between two worlds.
Yeah.
But he also can be a hero for the animals. So it left me kind of confused, but it had a possibility of putting me off to the movie's direction. Like, it could go too preachy. It could be that we are just setting up the story to show you the difference, because up to this point, we're not selling any real difference from any of the Jungle Books being told prior. So it's a tough needle to thread, and without seeing the movie, it's hard to say whether they were being true to the movie, but I think it kind of left me with an odd point of confusion. I don't think it would affect me going to see the movie, but I can see it objectively. If I were an executive on it, I wouldn't want to turn people off to seeing the movie by adding something that could go down the route of being too preachy.
The way I kind of took it was, it could be, and you might turn off people who don't see those political views, you know what I mean? And they're like, here we go. Like, I don't want to listen to this, you know, claptrap or whatever.
Right.
But at the same time, I saw it as they're setting up the conflict.
Yeah.
And the conflict in this one was more modern human against the jungle. And then he comes to the defense of the jungle as opposed to, like, the animal conflicts or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes.
That's the way I read into it anyway, is that that's the conflict in the movie that they're going to be battling.
And then you have what we were talking about before, you know your audience. And if your audience is going to be caring about it or not caring about it, then maybe that's okay to sell the conflict as that and let people figure it out. Oh, and then what do we say every week about every Netflix anything? It's like the barrier to going to see it.
Yeah, the bar is so low.
It's so low. It's like, we're going to see it. Like, it's like, there's no way to say we're not going to see it. And then it comes out so soon. So it's like, they told us about it and it's coming out at the end of the month, and then it's there. So,
yeah. And I also picked up too that, so it looks like it takes place probably, South Asia, like India or Pakistan or some, probably India though. And what I took from it was, like, colonialism gone awry in a way, right? 'Cause here's the white guy with the rifle, and then you see, like, like the, I don't know, the indigenous or however they like frame the people, the tribal people, whatever. And they frame, and I don't know what year this takes place. It looks like it might take place like around Indiana Jones times, right? Like the 1930s or something.
Uh-huh.
But yet it's still kind of modern. But then is the conflict like colonialism versus what should never have happened in India versus the jungle? So we'll just have to see how it plays out, I guess, you know? But
yeah,
there's a lot of different conflicts I think they're playing. But again, it can come off as preachy if I think if they don't do it well, and it can turn off certain, you know, demographics, I have a feeling. But I don't know, we'll have to see. And like you said, the bar is so low, why not? You know, hour 40 minutes, whatever the runtime is, and it is what it is. It tells the story.
There you go.
All right. Spies in disguise. I like the play with the rhyming.
Spies in disguise.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me. We have no trailers to the trailers this week, which is pleasant. But
yeah, I like when they get right into it.
But this actual Spies in Disguise, when I first saw this, I saw a different version of the same trailer, and it had a trailer to the trailer. And this is why I like to go to the official the website and check out the official version of the trailer, because somebody.
Right, to see what how they want it presented.
Right, somebody hacked it up, and they took the very first the line of dialogue. What is it? Dropped a beat?
Something like that.
Yeah, and they put that as the trailer, and then it cuts into him walking in with that body scan.
Right.
And then he says that same line, and I was like, oh, horrible, you know, yeah. Disgusting trailer. It was like the worst of the worst.
Well, and can you imagine if, like, Arctic had a trailer to the trailer, how that just would have ruined the whole feel and vibe of that trailer?
Yeah. Or if it started with a card that said, watch to the end.
Yeah. I know that's your favorite, you know, because you bring it up like every week.
My favorite to rag on.
Sorry. Yeah.
So Spies in Disguise. It's a fun take on this movie space. I think Blue Sky Studios and Fox. See, this is another Fox Family Entertainment. Another thing where on the Fox YouTube page, it doesn't have the video itself, but it links out to Blue Sky Studios link.
Yeah.
So it's a neat play there. And it's fun. And I didn't know it was Will Smith until halfway through or so, but it really has a great turn. You know, it has a lot of action, not a lot of dialogue, you know, and it's just like kicking ass, taking names through the whole first two thirds, even, right? First half. And then he gets birded or whatever.
Yeah. He's a pigeon. And the funny thing that you said, you didn't know it was Will Smith. My first thought was, I wonder if this is Will Smith, because they showed the like the spy black guy with like the thin cut, the thin cropped goatee and all this stuff. I'm like, because it looks like him. Yeah. You know, so I was like, and then when it was, I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. Like, they made the main character at least look like him. So he's not doing well. It's kind of like in Moana when they took the rock,
mm-hmm.
and he looked like, well, Maui. I meant, yeah, Maui. That's what I meant to say. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, to kind of, you know, when they take the character and they have the animated character resemble the voice, you know, I love when they do that, because it keeps you, I think, in the movie, because you're so, that voice is so well known.
Yeah, no, it's great.
But the one thing I got to say, though, what I want to do is get on my bicycle the way he gets into that, like, Bugatti or whatever that car is. It just comes flying at me and I'm just on the seat going.
Yeah, just sit down in space, and then you know that the chair will be there.
Exactly. I love that. Now, this looks like it could be some sort of like a Disney type film or so. Who's making this one?
So this one is Fox Family Entertainment.
Okay.
Blue Sky Studios. I think it's Illumination, right? Did it say Illumination?
You know, like I said, I got these so late. I barely had a chance to do anything with them. So, you know, I'm leaving it to you.
Oh, it's not Illumination, but it is Blue Sky. So I think this is a cool thing. And the reason we brought this one in this week was actually at the suggestion of Audrey.
Okay.
Audrey's a huge Tom Holland fan. So
gotcha.
So she's like, oh, that new Tom Holland movie. I'm like, but he plays like a little nerd. She goes, Tom Holland must be smart because he's always playing these genius kids. Why is he doing that?
But I love the concept of, you know, this kid is like controlling this spy, and I get the feeling that, yeah, he's like this smart like nerd or whatever who's controlling it and kind of like putting people in disguise. But it's like, is it kind of played out in his world at home, or is this like really happening, you know, as the story goes? Like, is it playing out in his fantasy world? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say. I think it feels like it's...
Yeah, you can't tell from the trailer, but it looks really cute.
It would be interesting if it's like all within like this little boy's imagination that he captures.
Yeah, I would love that.
He captures a pigeon and then makes it a superhero, or makes it a super spy.
Yeah, and he dresses him up in clothes and, you know, just does all these things. But in his imagination is where like the whole explosion scenes come in and all this, you know, like when he's playing at home in his garage or something.
You know, when I was in high school, I captured a pigeon.
Did you really?
Yeah. A pigeon just walked up to me and I was like, all right. And I was with my high school friends and I put the pigeon in a big box and I named him Poor Olimpio.
Poor Olimpio?
Yeah. I think it's a bad pronunciation of for example in Spanish.
So you just reached down and picked him up?
Yeah. I reached down, picked him up. I fed him for a couple of days and then we were like, fly, be free. And then I put him outside and I don't know what happened to him. He probably walked off and died.
And when you picked him up, he didn't like peck at you or anything?
No, nothing. He was totally cool.
Wow. Okay. Maybe he was someone's like pet, you know?
Maybe he was a spy in disguise.
I thought, I mean, you know, and you probably missed your calling. Instead of working in like the movie industry, you could have been one of those like carrier pigeon kind of people.
Like Mike Tyson?
Yeah. You know, you could like send notes around and have them fly places and... You could like put a little strip of paper in his claw and fly him to me for the show notes.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, and then I get the show notes, and then, you know, I'd really be late, you know, because you'd have to send everything out like weeks early before.
All by carrier pigeon.
Well, but hey, nobody can track it that way, right? Yeah. Google doesn't know what you're doing with carrier pigeon.
That's right.
Big pigeon, though, could be involved. I'm not sure. All right, so I'm assuming but with Audrey's love affair, Spies in Disguise is something you guys are going to go see as a family.
I think we're going to get some serious bargaining going, and she might go and make us see this. Sometimes we split it up. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess it's celebration for taking the middle school girls championship.
We already had Menchie's. We have Menchie's win or lose after each of the games this year, so.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bonding time and stuff. And, you know, and I was thinking too, like, they don't need to be going into playoffs. And I mean, they're too young to blow out their knees already, you know? So, all right, man. Yeah, Spies in Disguise. I don't know if there's a whole lot more to say about it. It looks pretty cool. I like the twist, as you mentioned.
And could you get a more perfect actor than Will Smith when he tells the girl pigeon to get off of him? It's just like, it's Will Smith doesn't have to stretch too much, but it's still so entertaining.
And he's a great voice.
Yeah.
You know, and I think over the years after, what was it?
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I was going to say Beverly Hills, but yeah, after the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know, and his weird rap career that he had, I mean, you know, the guy's come into his own in so many levels.
Yeah. If you haven't seen 6 Degrees of Separation, that was his acting debut, I believe.
Okay.
And it's just an amazing performance of an amazing movie, but the character that he plays, it's on par with Ed Norton in Primal Fear. It's these great characters where you don't know whether they're damaged or whether they're sociopaths. So I think it's well, and I guess most sociopaths are damaged. You'll have to tell me about that. but it is cool to see somebody like he plays like a kind of a grifter, but a kid, and he starts hobnobbing in this high society space. And it's amazing how he plays these high society people against each other and eating out of his hand. You know, it's an amazing movie. So
yeah, 1993. Wow.
Yeah, something that would easily be on Filmstruck if it was still around. So
yeah, they don't give it a good rating though.
Who doesn't?
IMDb 6.9.
Oh
yeah, but that's kind of people rating, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's more of a popularity thing.
Probably. All right, Ted, cool. So yeah, some good movies. You know, we kind of ad-libbed it tonight a little bit. We're 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, not anymore at 6 o'clock in the morning, but we started a little bit late. Birthdays and, you know, covered some cool stuff. I'm looking forward to a bunch. Like I said, Arctic, I definitely want to see more of that one. I'm totally intrigued. If anything, you know, I'm going to watch the trailer again because I think the trailer is so cool and well done. And it, you know, puts you in the space, like the solitude that the guy's feeling, and he's just alone out there waiting, you know, for someone to find him. And I think it's cool too, going back to that one. So if you look at Castaway, and Tom Hanks is on the island, and you know there is no way out because that wave break, he just can't get past.
Yes.
And you just go on all sides of the island and you're just like, there's nothing but ocean. No one's ever going to find you. And if you look at this, like, he could be on an island, I guess, but for the most part, he's probably on connected land, but he's so far removed that, yeah, you may as well be on an island. No one's going to find you. You know, I mean, I think that kind of play is really cool too.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's amazing on so many levels, and I can't wait to see it.
Absolutely. So I guess, you know, you enjoy the rest of your birthday week as you guys are going to be celebrating.
Celebrating all week.
Cool. And congratulations on hitting your mark.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, keep up the good work and keep the weight in check. And man, I won't even recognize you when I see you. Be all skinny. All that good stuff. So, all right, Ted, we'll catch you, man.
All right. See you later.
All right. Later.
Have a good one.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.